that we're working through within a lot of...
Thank you. Thank you for the very kind introduction. And I think the fact that I'm standing here as a community voluntary sector worker for a local charity and have my local commissioning group from the Health and Social Care Board coming to present alongside me shows how far we've come in this project in terms of collaboration. So delighted to share with you the journey that Mid and East Antrim Age Well Partnership, MEAP, the charity that I work for, has been on over the last 6 years, but more importantly the last 2.5, 3 years, in terms of developing an integrated asset-based community to supporting older people in our community. So who are MEAP? We're an older people's charity that was set up in 2011, covering the area of Ballymena, Larne and Carrickfergus. So you'll see the wee logo, Ballymena was the blue area, Larne was the pink and Carrickfergus was the green. And we were developed to cover that area prior to the review of public administration. So in 2011, there were three very separate councils. And in 2016, these three council areas amalgamated to become what was known as the Super-Duper Council of Mid and East Antrim Borough Council. So we actually were up and running before the super councils in our area, which was quite interesting. Our vision's quite simple. We want Mid and East Antrim to be a place where everyone can actively age well together, but by being involved, heard and valued. I joined the organisation just short of 6 years ago to be their first staff member, first and only staff member at that stage, to take the lead in a big lottery flagship Age and Well and Reaching Out programme, where we delivered projects like social activities, luncheon clubs, men's sheds, choirs, etc. We also then worked with Bryson Energy to do handy person services to help older people have an affordable way of doing small home repairs, because not every contractor wants to go and just reseal a shower, but it's very important for that older person. We also worked in partnership with the Citizens Advice to do benefit entitlement and increase that, and then the Good Morning Telephone Befriending service. So that was where we started just short of 6 years ago, moving from a concept to actual project delivery. Whenever I joined it, the word partnership was the most important part of that, and really wanted to embrace that and see how far we could actually go with the initial investment from Big Lottery Fund. 6 years on, MEAP now have a staff team of 10. We've got 4 flagship projects. I'm delighted that the Age and Well and Reaching Out project that was originally funded by Big Lottery, we managed to engage with council and community planning partners, including the Health and Social Care Board and Public Health Agency, for example, to sustain that project post Big Lottery funding finishing. We've got the Impact Age Well project that we're going to tell you about today, the Peace and Ages Together, which was a cross community project, and the Community Navigator programme. And those are the 4 flagship. So we have a real breadth of diversity of programmes that we do, and we're quite a small but very agile organisation. So to tell you a bit about our area that we cover, we have about the whole population of Mid and East Antrim is just short of 140,000, covering 400 square miles. It's a beautiful Antrim coastline. My traffic jam in the morning's a tractor to work, so which is quite cool. I'm quite rural, and this is Slemish, which is known as the pimple in the local landscape, with lots of sheep. Our population is 60% urban, 40% rural. Some areas very affluent, other areas very deprived. Religion is a big thing in that 73% is Protestant, 19% is Catholic, and 8% is other. And a lot of our health services in Northern Ireland are duplicated because of religion, for example. And in terms of local jobs and employment, this was a massive area for manufacturing. But over the last 3 years especially, we've seen a lot of job losses and closures. Michelin, the tyre factory, closed in 2015, losing 860 jobs. And Gallagher's closed in 2017, losing 800 jobs. And a lot of these were for people who had, that was the only job they had done. And a lot of older people were then having to reskill and try and find other employment. So, as I explained, MEAP have been up and running since July 2013, doing a lot of different projects. And in November 2017, we spotted the opportunity that the Dunhill Medical Trust had out expressions of interest or proposals for to develop a network of care for older people at a local level. 3 years of funding worth about £1 million. And needless to say, we spotted the opportunity late November, and I sought permission from my voluntary board to start working with all the different partners to try and collaborate a proposal to get something together. With Christmas and the New Year period, we basically had 6 weeks to get the proposal into Dunhill Medical Trust because it had to be in by the end of February. And this was quite a push for a lot of the partners who I'm going to introduce you to in the next slide, because they're quite used to having a long time to plan. Long, long time. But if we weren't in, we couldn't win. And it was like, well, we've 6 weeks, folks. We can't move the deadline. This is the deadline. We have to go for it. So why did MEAP want to do this in partnership with the different healthcare professionals? Over the 3 years prior, we had no referrals from GP practices. We had very few from community pharmacy. And all the health trust wanted us to do was the nice social stuff, the befriend and the handy person. Didn't really want to embrace or know how to embrace or know the value of embracing community development. And so in order for us to actually reach the target audience that as a charity we would really want to do, we needed to really engage with them. And in the 3 years prior, I had sat on every single platform absolutely possible. Healthcare initiatives, community planning, older people's panels, and had always I've always been this annoying child of why, and kept that up. And so I was actually very well known to a lot of the partners that we had to engage. So very quickly we got all of the partners around the table, integrated care partnerships, our health and social cares more integrated in Northern Ireland than here as far as I know. Mid and East Antrim Borough Council, community planning, primary care and community together, which is actually a population-based model of engaging community pharmacy, a new social enterprise that was set up when we were the first to work with, the Health and Social Care Board, who's responsible for local commissioning, ourselves, the local trust who do the secondary care and the social care services, and the Community Development and Health Network, who our Northern Ireland-wide organisation. And I asked the ambulance service to come in at a later date, as did the Medicines Optimisation Innovation Centre. But in terms of designing the bid, we had GPs, we had the Health Trust councils all around the table to design the bid. And I'm now going to pass over to Pat Smith to tell you a wee bit more about policy and figures.
Good afternoon, everybody. So as you've already heard, I work for the Health and Social Care Board as a Commissioner of Local Health and Social Care Services. And I'm just going to speak a wee bit about some of the challenges we're facing and take you through that. As we're all aware, there are many challenges in delivering health and social care at present, especially rising demand. And as you can see from this slide, Mid and East Antrim, the area that we're focusing on, has an ageing population. In 2001, 14% of Mid and East Antrim's population was aged 65 and over. This rose to 18% in 2015 and is projected to increase to 25% by 2030. As can also be seen in this graph, the percentage of people aged 65 and over in Mid and East Antrim is higher than that of Northern Ireland as a whole. In fact, by 2030, our borough will have the second highest level of over 65s across all 11 councils in Northern Ireland. We should, of course, celebrate the fact that we are living longer. It is good news. However, many people face challenges with health as they grow older. Right, there we go. Okay, so As you can see here, some of the health challenges are reflected in this slide. In 2011, in Mid and East Antrim, 68% of those aged 65 and over were living with a long-term health condition. In particular, 35% of older people had mobility or dexterity difficulty. A quarter had long-term pain or discomfort. 21% had a chronic illness. A fifth had deafness or partial hearing loss. And 17% had shortness of breath or difficulty breathing. This is what the growth in the older population looks like in Northern Ireland. And the red bar is actually the northern area of which Mid and East Antrim is a part. And notably, between 2017 and 2041, there's a 62% increase projected in the 65-plus age range. That is, one in four will be 65-plus. This shows how people age. As how people age, they use health and social services significantly more. At 65-plus, the line starts to climb and cost per head rises steeply. But, of course, it's not all about the cost. Challenges with health have such an impact on quality of life, not just for the person, but their whole wider family circle and carers in particular. Previous slides have demonstrated the challenges, but what are the policymakers in Northern Ireland saying in response? We actually do have, as you'll see on the slide there, a programme for government document, despite the fact we don't have a government, unfortunately, at the moment, so they're not speaking very loudly to us. The document actually has cross-departmental outcomes that are relevant to a healthy, thriving society, and many of them do focus on ageing well, quite rightly so. We have a strategy there called Making Life Better. That is the public health strategy, and it clearly focuses on well-being. It speaks loudly about the development of community capacity and social capital. The strengths and assets within communities are a key to making progress. Delivering Together, which is the Health and Wellbeing 2026 document, is a 10-year approach to transforming health and social care in Northern Ireland. And it outlines the need to enable people to stay well for longer and, where possible, to provide care and support in the community. It's interesting that the foreword highlights the WHO definition of health as a state of complete physical, mental and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. The plan articulates the need for a new model of person-centred care focused on prevention, early intervention and supporting independence and well-being. You'll see there on the slide Power to People proposals to reboot adult care and support in Northern Ireland. That's our most recent one that was developed just last year. And it talks about building resilient communities. It says people live in homes and communities, not in social care systems. It even has a quote from MEAP, which says, "We challenge government to invest in communities and to develop innovative projects." The Mid and East Antrim Borough Council Community Plan also talks quite a bit about ageing well. So policy is directing us towards addressing the challenges of a growing ageing population by taking an approach that goes beyond the medical models and harnesses the assets in local communities. We must recognise that what impacts on our health and social well-being is multifactorial, as outlined in the slide. And you'll see there the social determinants of health, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. But it is worth just thinking about the impact on our health and on our ability to age well in light of these social determinants of health. They all impact on our health and well-being. Our childhood experiences, housing, education, social support, family income, employment, our communities and access to health services. This is quite a challenge when you think about it, trying to really work with all of these elements. Michael Marmot says, "The fact is that the conditions to which we are exposed influence our behaviour. Most of us cherish the notion of free choice, but our choices are constrained by the conditions in which we are born, grow, live, work and age. I will now hand back to Deirdre, who will describe how Impact Age Well has translated this policy direction into action.
Thank you, Pat. Hopefully a lot of you are familiar with this model, but whenever we first brought it to primary care and secondary care, you'd be surprised how few people actually know about the social determinants of health. And yet every policy and practice talks about it, but we do very, very little to implement it in the area. So Pat has outlined the strong case for embracing that. And as I said earlier, we submitted our initial concept to Dunhill in February 2016. And I think, to be honest, a lot of people said, maybe shut Deirdre up if we just go along and put in the application, because we haven't a hope, because it's a big UK-wide opportunity and we haven't a hope of bringing it home. We got shortlisted and had to submit a full business plan within another 6 weeks by the end of June 2016. John and Sarah came over and visited us in August and quizzed us, and then I was brought over along with two of the Impact Age Well co-design team to be further quizzed by the wider Dunhill team. And in October 2016, so just short of 3 years, we were found out that we were successful. So what do you do whenever you find out you've been successful? I went on a month backpacking around New Zealand before I knew I was going to have to attempt to implement the project. So what are the aims of Impact Age Well? The older person is put at the centre of everything we do. Any argument or any discussion, it's the older person perspective that we value most. We want to improve the health and well-being of older people by ensuring they're fully involved and their voices heard. We want to build the knowledge and diversity of our ageing population and the knowledge that we have, but we also want to build the knowledge and diversity within the health and social care sector. And we do this by operating in very integrated, valued and safe partnerships. And hopefully by doing all of that, we will show a reduction in the cost of unscheduled use of health and social care support. Because we all know that fiscal return is what health and social care are very familiar with and want us to prove. So we've had to learn to start speaking the lingo of health and social care and commissioners, as opposed to always looking at the social side and provide a real evidence base. Now, Impact Age Well set up 6 locality hubs initially, and this reason was we weren't interested in just getting referrals from GPs or from community pharmacy or from social workers. We wanted to make sure that they worked together, because the conversations we had with older people told us the system was so disjointed. We had to keep repeating our story. We were pushed from pillar to post, and actually none of them talked to each other. So part of our model was that we would have monthly meetings with these multidisciplinary teams, and we would have an Impact Age Well officer, one of my staff, who would actually be there facilitating those meetings. And in terms of a target audience, we went for the hardest to reach, purposely, because I suppose as a charity, that's the ones that we found hardest to like, I can fill a room. Last week we filled a room with 400 older people, not a problem. But it's not the 400 older people we would ideally want. We want the people who are not connected in or can't get to. This was what this project was all about. So we targeted those most at risk of isolation, loneliness. So people who lived alone or lived with another older person. Comorbidity, so they had 2 or more long-term health conditions. And polypharmacy, because again, the statistics show that they actually cost the NHS the most money. So we decided, right, we're going to try and tackle this. Coming up with that criteria sounds quite simple. There's a massive negotiation behind that, including 6 months to get to the stage of including frailty, using the Rockwood Clinical Frailty Scale, because we do want to do things in a very measured and structured way so that we can prove evidence, and that's where we're at. All of these partners can identify older people who meet this criteria. And again, the learning was really quick. GPs don't actually know who live alone. GPs don't know who receives domiciliary care, because that's provided by the trust. The community pharmacy don't actually know what prescriptions they are dispensing for what long-term health conditions, because they only know what they're dispensing. They don't know what it was actually prescribed for. There is real flaws in our information sharing systems that mean that we cannot deliver person-centred care. So it's amazing how actually having these four people around the room, and then whenever our Impact Age Bill officer goes out to meet the older person, we get consent, informed consent, to share information together so that we can put a fuller picture together. And the role is the Impact Age Bill officer goes out over roughly a six-month period to go out and have constant conversations in that older person's home, so where they're most comfortable in their own environment. This is not a healthcare professional. This is a healthcare practitioner with no need for a medical background. And we go out and have guided conversations around those social determinants of health. So around things like housing, transport, even conversations about what if. Do you know what's going to happen whenever you're approaching the end of life? Have you planned that, etc.? Just real gentle conversations. And it's amazing how that opens up a wealth of information. And the idea is that if there's something medical that we in these monthly or bi-monthly meetings can say to the GP, well, actually, this lady has a hoard full of tablets. She hasn't a clue what she's taking them for. Can somebody please go in and sort this out for her? And then the GP and the community pharmacist have a discussion there and then and agree who's going to do what. And we record that, and then at the next meeting we hold them to account. We ask, did you get that done? If not, why not? What was the outcome of it? And actually, the initial start of the process was quite difficult because they don't like traditionally having to report back. But they were finding that actually by doing that, it was creating less workload and doing that really quickly. And now we don't even have to wait to meetings. We get notifications from the older person, but from the healthcare professional involved, that they've already done that, and thank you very much. The progress to date, we had envisaged just creating six locality hubs. Three GP practices came willingly. We had to arm wrestle the other three on initially. We do offer a small incentive, as in a small portion of funding, to try and protect professional time, because part of that scoping learned that having that small investment would help us engage. And in May last year, I nearly thought it was April Fool's Day. I got a phone call from a GP practice saying, we've heard about your work. Can we join? I was like, what? Are you serious? You don't need me banging at your door. And hence we've grown to 11 locality hubs. Those five additional GP practices have come and actively sought out to be part of the project. So it's peer-to-peer selling. It's GP practices selling to other GP practices. And our key individual that we found in GP practice is actually the practice manager. You don't go near the GP. You go to the practice manager, their senior receptionist, and they get you in through the door. And what we always do is, Sue would say, we bring cake with us to show that we're not medical, that we're all about having enjoyment and learning together. The plan was to identify 1,100 older people over the 3 years. Sitting at the end of year two, we've identified 780 referrals initially. You see there's quite a high number of declines. The majority of those are actually because whenever we've done the one-off home visit, we've actually identified that that older person has a wealth of support in their local community or via their family, or indeed they don't live alone, that they have a daughter or a son who lives with them. Or that they're managing their health conditions really well. But what the GP and the social services teams have been using that information for is to update their current system with simple things like revised next of kin contact details, who does live alone, what family support is available, and finding out about they might have got a one-off medicine use review. We do a lot of signposting as part of those one visits. The other element was, as well as going in and having these conversations, we want to try and connect older people into community and voluntary sector services to become more socially connected. There's a There's a term out at the moment, I'm sure, hopefully most of you are familiar with, social prescriptions. We see this project as being very different from those that are traditionally presented as social prescribing, because it's very integrated and we have that feedback mechanism, but also because we recognise that the community and voluntary sector groups that we're connecting older people to need funding to deliver. You wouldn't, as Sue had said at our launch, you wouldn't ask a pharmacist or a GP to look at an older person without providing some form of payment to facilitate them either providing the prescriptions or hosting the appointment. So why do we expect the same of community and voluntary sector? That reciprocity has to go right through. So we have created partnerships. The numbers are an awful lot lower than anticipated. We have had community groups who have declined funding opportunities because they're not used to dealing with unrestricted funds. We have a lot of older people who have been so disconnected from community that they don't want to or become involved in a group. And the community and voluntary sector also struggle to deliver one-to-one social interventions in somebody's home because of cost, but also because of safeguarding and vulnerable adults and the availability of volunteers. You know, getting really good, reliable volunteers is not that easy to come by. But for us, it's what matters to the older person, not what is the matter with them. So stories for us are evidence, and it's actually the stories and the vignettes that have really got the partners excited about this project. So Sally, we went out to meet Sally. We found out she actually likes to be called Betty, not Sally, and yet the GP records don't allow her to be called Sally, or called Betty, sorry. We found she had a cupboard full of tablets, so we connected her to community pharmacy, who cleared out her cupboard, but also helped to do an inhaler technique. She didn't know who to talk to about getting a grab rail in her bathroom because she was struggling. We connected her in and done a direct referral through to the occupational therapy team. She was worried about falling outside in her pathway whenever she was hanging out her washing. And we connected her into the community and voluntary sector handy person service. And then she also found out about community transport, which she used to access her local luncheon club. And at that luncheon club, she got a presentation from Citizens Advice and then went on to claim and complete a benefits or an entitlement check, and now didn't have to worry about heating her home without worrying about the bills. It's not a rocket science model, folks. It's real back to basics of health and what matters to you as opposed to what condition you are labelled with. And I'm delighted. We have a short video here whereby you're going to hear from Leslie and Rose about the impact the project has had on them, if it works. Oh, yes.
My name is Ellen. I work for a local charity called Mid and East Antrim Agewell Partnership as an Impact Agewell Officer. We're all about keeping people linked in the community and happy and healthy. Our aim is to support older people to remain active and involved in their local community.
The GP will look at the referrals sent in by everyone and select which ones are the most appropriate.
There's been a number of patients who have come back and have reported benefits. Our key worker has a wealth of knowledge of local services and has the time to discuss those and try and encourage the clients to get involved.
My own mother has participated in the Impact Agewell programme herself. Ellen got a handyman in and she put locks and things on her door, so she now feels a lot more secure in her own home.
When she first came, she gave me a folder to flip through, which had several things in. Whereas if you join us, we've got a scheme where if someone rings every morning, if they don't get an answer, they'll ring again later and then they'll come looking for you, she said. She asked anything bothers me, and I said at the moment it's nuisance phone calls. She got someone to come around, a policeman I think it was, come round and fixed a gadget on my phone, and since then it's been like a different world. Every time the phone rings I know that it's not going to be a nuisance.
This is something that's not a fast fix. If it was embedded in practice and something that was able to be provided, then I think the ongoing benefits would be long lasting.
Because it's great help that's out there. Ellen tells us about that we didn't know was there.
There's absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain.
Okay, I'm going to hand over to Pat, who's going to summarise about what has worked well on the project so far.
Okay, so as Deirdre said, I want to reflect on what has worked well, and as you can see here, we have some key highlights, and I'll just go through this fairly quickly. We've referred already to the fact that the proof of concept was a 3-year period, and that was just so useful. We're so used to getting grants that are just for a year, and really that doesn't give anything time in terms of embedding things and, most importantly, developing relationships, which this project is really about that, significantly developing relationships amongst so many different bodies and people. One example that came to mind fairly early on was in Carrickfergus Health Centre, which is where we would have GPs, social work teams, a community pharmacy all based. We had a locality hub meeting and we brought them together for the first time around the table. And amazingly, they had never actually met each other despite working under the same roof. And it's not that big a health centre. And they were quite taken aback as well when they realised that, and they started to talk about patients who were patients relating to all of them. So that was a very powerful moment when we realised just how important the relationship building is. The funder, Dunhill Medical Trust, has allowed us to change as we have learned, as the project has evolved. And again, that was a really useful and quite unique thing in terms of funding opportunities. It is very much community-led, as you'll have seen, and that brings with it real flexibility, a responsive and proactive approach. And as we've talked about quite significantly, the responses impact on the person. We don't treat them as a patient, we treat them as a person and all the elements that impact on their health and well-being. All the partners, as you'll have heard, were involved from the design stage. It was definitely a coalition of the willing, as we call it. And one of Deirdre's favourite phrases is that we definitely join the dots. We bring together statutory partners who typically work in different departments and so on, but we join the dots. We bring everybody together, and again, it's very person-centred. We have been able to share data, which again is quite a big step across different organisations, and we have a data sharing protocol agreed to help us have information for evaluation purposes. We have a very strong infrastructure. We have a strategic hub that meets quarterly, and it provides direction and advice and guidance and reflects on what's happening. The locality hubs you've already heard a lot about, very powerful, meet now bi-monthly in the GP practices involving all the teams. Everyone involved is financially resourced and equally valued, including the community groups who provide the funded social prescriptions. There's a lot of networking, which wasn't expected, I think. And I would all recommend that you all follow Deirdre on Twitter, and you'll see the extent of the networking that Deirdre manages to do. And there's a lot of feeding back to the department and the policymakers. I outlined at the start the sorts of policies and strategic directions, and I think we're telling them now how it can actually be done and what it means on the ground, which is just great. The staffing, the team that Deirdre now has around her are invaluable, and we do have to say thanks to them. They're very motivated, they're very passionate, and again, that means a lot. And Deirdre herself provides really sterling leadership. And again, one of the offshoots has been the amount of awards that the project is receiving. A very recent one was Deirdre received an award for leading transformation in healthcare and was up against some very major local charities. So we were all delighted. And she gets to go to Sweden for a week in the autumn to learn more about ageing well practices in Sweden. So watch this space. She'll be coming back with lots of ideas and enthusiasm. Okay. Most importantly, of course, is the impact on people's lives, and that we hope you'll be seeing has worked very well. I, as a partner, have the privilege to interview some of the participants of Impact Age Well and for evaluation purposes, but I chose to do this because it's a really powerful way of finding out what's going on the ground and the difference it's making. I have observed what has worked well for them, and it's again very simple things: providing information, instilling confidence in people who maybe haven't left their homes for 1 or 2 years, motivating people. Again, people become very demotivated when they're not feeling great. providing reassurance as well as all the practical measures that you've heard about. One practical measure that really sticks in my mind, a gentleman told me about, he has very chronic IBS and had become really housebound, didn't want to go out, was very frightened of going out and basically needing a bathroom. So something as simple as a card that indicates an urgent need to use the toilet that he can present in a shop and say to somebody, could I please use your toilet? And really the confidence that has given him, he's now going out shopping again. He's joined a local club, which actually is all about health and well-being. So he's now learning how to manage his diet, etc., etc. It's just amazing what such a simple thing can do. Okay, hand over to Deirdre again.
Okay, so very quickly, folks, it's not all been plain sailing. So please do not underestimate how hard it has been to get here. Challenges, MEAP were very small and grew quite quickly, not only winning the Impact Agewell project, but two other projects, so capacity and governance. And for many, it's been a massive leap of faith. We've jumped out of somewhere where we're very comfortable into a much larger pool and are trying to lead real development and influence policy. Moving upstream, we've a healthcare sector that's in crisis, and me trying to say to them, if you spend a wee bit more time in prevention, early intervention, we might save more time in the long run. The short term is we are in crisis and have real workload issues and workforce capacity issues and waiting lists. Action research based evaluation, we have a very strong evaluation, and if you follow us on Twitter, we'll be launching our report shortly about change over time. But actually, in terms of, as similar to what Adam had said, getting data and all of that, it takes an awful lot of time and effort and resource. But every angle's been covered. We've got qualitative, quantitative, fiscal, social, you name it, we're trying to cover it. And then my way versus your way, collaboration is very difficult. Even agreeing the conditions, changing how community and voluntary sector are perceived. We're seen as being the people who do the nice things, and this isn't something we should really be involved in, to be honest. And sharing power and allowing the community to lead was quite difficult for some partners. But would we do it again? Definitely. The support from Dunhill Medical Trust has been so encouraging and has gone beyond that of a traditional funder. They're now a partner. The stories and feedback are what keep us going. We are influencing policy and having a stronger voice. We're showing how social prescribing can go beyond the very traditional model. And there's no question we need to. We have an ageing population, less resources, need to be more integrated and do less siloed working. And actually, as an ageing population, we're changing. So we really need to challenge how we perceive older people. And so I'm going to share two very short 30-second videos, one in a nursing home and one in a community setting, just to show you how age is just a number. Was the nursing home that got involved in our recent Peace and Ages Together project, and this is a community project. Folks, that's just a reminder, I don't want to be doing step aerobics or armchair aerobics or anything like that. As I age, I want to have fun, and age disgracefully, if that's what people want to refer to it as. And actually last week we had the end of that project, Peace and Ages Together, and we had 400 people having a rave in Tully Glass, complete with glow sticks and trampolines. So it can be done. We just have to challenge our perception of age. Thank you very much.